Okay, so let's say how did everybody do on the arithmetic programs? How many people got all four running?
Pass the judge. Anybody get all four past the judge? No. Anybody get three past the judge? You did. Which one didn't you get past the judge?
The archaeologist's dilemma.
I heard somebody solve that one. Somebody solved the archaeologist's dilemma? And that it was, somebody was telling, one of the guys was at pizza yesterday, actually. Sometimes we solved that
one. I would be very interested to see how they did that.
Yeah. Okay, so we got them to ask that question. How many people got two of them running? Okay, good. How many people got one of them running? Okay, how many people got none of them running? Okay. Okay, midterms. Okay. Are midterms over now? Or almost over, or it's getting worse?
Right now.
Okay, good. Okay,
so hopefully this week we will do... Get back on track after the midterm issue. So this week we're going to start dealing with problems on counting.
Okay. How many people have had the combinatorics class AMS 301? Okay. How many people have not yet had that? Okay. And you guys have to take that to be a CS major, right, or not?
Yes, required.
Oh, you're not a CS major. What are you?
IS.
Okay.
And do I have to take it?
You took what? You took. You have a choice of 310 or 301? For IS. Okay, but for the CS people, you have to take 301. Okay, so in AMS 301, you study combinatorics. And how many people liked combinatorics? How many people didn't like combinatorics? Why didn't you like combinatorics?
Mainly because I
didn't
want to
Okay, but that has nothing to do with combinatorics in general. And as a subject, anyone have anything interesting to say about whether they like or dislike combinatorics? Or what do they like or dislike about? Yeah.
I mean, I haven't taken it at college level, but I've had it. You know, the introduction that I know of it, I thought it was very interesting. It seems applicable to a lot of things.
Yeah. So combinatorics, I find, is a very interesting subject. What's interesting is it's very easy to get wrong answers. Okay, there's some areas of math where, you know, if you vaguely understand what you're going to do, you know, there's a standard way to apply the formula. You're not surprised when you get the, you know, when they give you an answer, you know you're right. Or I guess that's basically what it is. In a lot of areas, certain areas, you get an answer, you know you're right. Okay, in combinatorics, you get an answer and you don't know whether you're right sometimes. And that's one of the things that makes it tricky. So we've got a couple of, what I'd like to do, I don't want to re-teach you AMS 301 or teach you AMS 301 in combinatorics if you haven't had it. I want us to, we have four problems this week where I claim there is some counting component to it, okay? And I'd like to review some of the techniques in counting that I find very useful, and that may help you solve the problem. So the first of the problems in this week's the combinatorics section is that there is it's motivated as a story of this kid who hasn't completely figured out how to write letters yet, sort of like actually my 2.5-year-old, but wants to basically make numbers from the digits 1, 2, 3, and 4. But doesn't know the difference between 1 and 4. So he thinks 1 is another way to write 4. Okay? I mean, how many ways are there to write Z? You know, if you write Z, you can write a Z like this or a Z like that. If you're not good enough with the letters, you might get them confused. Think they're different letters. For our poor guy, can count, sees the numbers digits 1, 2, 3, and 4. Thinks they're both synonyms for one. Okay? And he wants to know how many streams of digits can he make that adds up to a particular number. So, for example, how many ways can he make numbers that add up to 2 in this world? Okay? The string 1, 1 adds up to 2, right? Did string 1, 4 adds up to 2? If 4 is just another way of writing 1, right?
Yeah.
Okay, 4, 1 doesn't. What other ways can you add up to 2?
4-4.
4-4? What other ways can you add up to 2?
2.
2.
Oh, okay.
So there are 5 strings that add up to 2. Does everybody sort of agree with that? Is that the answer that it gives? And there's 13 strings, it says, that add up to 3. What strings are there that add up to 3? Let's maybe go through that one just to be sure we understand it. How do we make strings that add up to 3?
1 and 2.
1 and 2. 2 and 1. 1 and 4. Oh, wait, no, 4 and 2. 2 and 4, okay. What else?
3. 3.
What else?
1, 1, 4.
How many combinations of the ones and fours can we make?
It's an interesting question. 8, right?
Right. How many different ways can we write it when we're allowed a 1 or a 4 in each position? I will argue that there's probably 8 of them, right? There's 2 choices for the first, 2 choices for the second, 2 choices for them. Doesn't make any difference, right? So I would argue that there's 8 ways of doing it that way. 8 plus 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 is 13. Does everybody agree with that? So the question is, can we count how many ways there are as a function for a given n, how many ways are there to express these things? Any questions or ideas or anything like that? So I'm pretty sure I'm looking for ideas now, so I'm looking for questions. Okay? Okay?
So, another question, the next one is also a counting problem. It asks you about parenthesizations. And it wants to know how many ways are there to parenthesize things such that it's well-formed formula and it doesn't get too deep.
Okay. So here I'm giving you N, you have 2 parameters here, N and B. And I want to know how many ways are there to parenthesize things using n left parentheses and n right parentheses, if I'm correct.
Or does it, is that what n means? Or does n mean the total number of parentheses? N is the length, so actually, no, n is always going to be an even number.
Oh, it's going to be interesting. So n is the number of parentheses that you're using. And V is the depth of nesting.
So they report the depth of nesting is somehow, if we take a look at this thing, the expression here, they say, this
has a nesting depth of 2 because you have a left parenthesis within a right parenthesis, right? A left parenthesis within another left parenthesis. So the depth of an expression is how deep it is. Okay? And your goal is to count how many expressions can be made on n parentheses with depth D. Okay? Any questions? Let's maybe work out an example just to make sure we understand. What is the test case here?
The first one is 6-2.
How many ways are there that you can make an expression of on 6 parentheses is exactly 2 levels deep? Okay. Does anyone want to suggest that? How did you do that? I need to have something of size D. I could have left, left. Right, right. Or not the other pair stuck in here.
Right.
Right? Does everybody sort of agree?
Those have to be in depth 2.
No, but this is now in depth 2. The depth of this.
Okay.
This thing is now a depth 2, right? Because the deepest point in here is 2. Okay? Does everybody agree with that? The deepest point in here is 2. And this unit with that is 2. So there's 3 ways of doing it. Okay? Does the other
side, is the other one too large to count? Well, no, the other one is actually not very large. 150, a depth of 150, if you have 300 parentheses. What's the, how many ways can you make it 150 deep if you have 300 parentheses?
1. What is that?
All the
lefts and all the rights. Okay. Any questions? Yeah.
So if this is death's 150, that means there has to be at least one case that it's the death is 150.
Right, so they want to know depth exactly equal to that. There has to be, in the expression, has to be at least one position in the formula that is, the deepest position in the formula has to be the specified depth.
Okay.
They want depth exactly equal to that.
All right.
Okay, any questions? Any questions about that? Okay, so you want to count that. The next problem, it has to do with the Tower of Hanoi problem. Yeah, question. What? What are the three expressions here?
Yeah.
Let me write them out. Left, right. Those are the three formulas.
Three separate formula,
right? Is everybody agree? The three separate formula, each is a depth two, and two. Okay, but we don't get credit enough, you know, this part of the time, two things at the same time. Any questions? Okay. The third one has to do with a problem called the Tower of Hanoi. Has anyone here heard of the Tower of Hanoi? Okay. Everybody has heard of the Tower of Hanoi, right? Can anybody here who has not heard of the Tower of Hanoi? Okay, don't be afraid to say so. Okay, this is a constant example. But here we have an interesting version of the Tower of Hanoi, where how many banks does the Tower of Hanoi have? Great, okay. And what the Tower of Hanoi says, you would have to move discs from one prop bank to another, such that you don't put a bigger disc on top of a smaller disc. And you want to move all the pegs. Okay, everybody has seen a recursive solution to this, right? Now, does anyone remember how many moves it takes? Okay, something like that, okay? Now, what about this problem we're going to talk about? Let's call it for now the Tower of Brooklyn instead. Where instead, okay, related to the Tower of Hanoi, where these people realize that 2 to the n is a large number of moves. What if I give you 4 pegs? Okay? You want to move all the discs from here to here. Okay? You're still not allowed to put a big disc on top of a little disc. But suppose I give you 4 pegs. You get away with less moves? Okay, did someone give me an argument that using more pegs, having more pegs at your disposal can't increase the number of moves you need? Right, so what you want to say is if you give me n pegs, okay, if we consider, let's say, the towers of Manhattan, where there's a lot of towers, okay? What you're saying is one way you could solve the towers of Manhattan problem would be you slap every one, you know, you peel off the small discs, put them all on different pegs, put the largest disc on the last peg, and then you can collect everybody back immediately, right? So if you have enough pegs, 2 times n moves will suffice, right? Okay? If you have exactly 3 pegs, something like 2 to the n minus 1 are necessary. And the question is, how do you do the Tower of Hanoi when you've got 4 pegs? Okay? And basically, they give you a scheme here, and they want you to evaluate how well you can do given a certain kind of class of Tower of Hanoi strategies. Okay? Any questions? You have to read it to get a better idea of that. But basically, I think that's the statement. Any questions? Final question is has to do with a what we'll call a self-describing sequence. Suppose we define the following sequence of integers from 1 to, you know, all on the integers. The ith value of the sequence is going to always be monotonically increasing or monotonically non-decreasing, meaning the numbers keep going up, they don't go down. Right? That's what it means to be monotonically increasing. Okay? And the property of it is that there are F of I occurrences of I for every I. Okay, so let's think what that means.
Okay. I want a sequence that is always increasing. And I want to know that there are F of 1, here are the numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. When I said F of 1 equals to 1, what does that mean? F of I is going to be the number of occurrences of I in my sequence, right? So if F of 1 is 1, what does that mean? I've only got one occurrence of 1 in the sequence, right? If F of 2 is 2, okay? Okay, let's think about it. Can I have F of 2 be equal to 1? Okay, if so, there's two occurrences of 1, right? There's one occurrence of 2. I guess if I have F of 3 equal to, but it's not exactly, I think it says that it means that I need F of I occurrences of I for each K. What is the ith value of the sequence where each thing that there's F of K occurrences for each K and it keeps increasing. So the sequence that I want to have is the sequence that starts out as follows. Suppose there is one sequence issue of 1 and two occurrences of 2. Let's maybe consider that the basis case of this problem. How many occurrences of 3 are there by this measure? There have to be 2, exactly. There's exactly one occurrence of 1, exactly here, two occurrences of 2. Let's use this as the initial condition. And from now on, in general, there's exactly F of I occurrences of I. How many occurrences of 3 are there? Look over here. How many occurrences of 3 are there?
Oh,
2. 2. So 3, 3. How many occurrences of 4 are there? 3 occurrences of 5 are there?
3.
How many occurrences of 6 are there?
4.
Is this sequence going to be well defined? Meaning, is this sequence now, do I now have an infinite sequence that I'm generating? I mean, can you see how this construction goes on to infinity? Now I figured out how many sixes there are. When I'm finished, I'm now going to put them on sevens, right? And I have room for 4 sevens. I have room for 4 eights. I have room. I claim that this will, you know, basically, this the number that I've already put down is increasing. I can continue to write this sequence at will because you already have told me how many of the next digit I'm going to have. Everybody agree with that? So this is an infinite sequence. That once you, let's say, start with 1 and 2, at the very, I think, you know, the construction is unambiguous. Okay, correct? So basically the question that I want you to do is, in some sense, very simple. I want you, I'm going to give you an integer n, and I want you to tell me what is, the input is, I give you, I want you to tell me what the value of f of n is. Okay, so basically what you're saying here is, what is the value of f of n? Okay, where n is up to 2 billion. Okay? So what is it that you want to do? How do you want to do this?
Well, I mean, I would think the simplest way would be to, find out all the numbers and before.
You want to build an array of the sequence, right? You want to construct this sequence, right? So that seems like an easy way. Do we have trouble with this? Well, what, inefficient in what? Suppose I give you this for N equals 2 billion. 2 billion, right? You have to store 2 billion numbers, right? So can you store 2 billion numbers on any computer that you guys have? What, how much memory do you have? I mean, eventually, how much memory do you have, Hot Shots, on your PC? Okay. You've got the biggest one we've got. Well, okay, but then they don't have more than you have. Well, how big is the memory these days? 250 megabytes. Well, if you store each number in a byte, you're still only up to here. Right? Does everybody agree with that? So you do not have enough memory to construct this sequence explicitly. Okay? So you have to do something smarter. Okay? Any questions? Okay? So we agree to simple, it would be simple to write a program, and it might be healthy just for fun, to write a program that explicitly constructs this thing. Maybe it's healthy to help check your answers, for example. Not just for fun, but to check your answers, okay? But the question is, you need a smarter way to do it. What if it's too large to construct in memory? Okay? And to do this, I claim you somehow need to do some counting or arithmetic or something like that. Any questions? So these are the four problems of the week, and they all somehow have to do a little bit with counting. Okay? I think these three are explicitly doing with counting, and this one, you know, I'd say is culturally akin to counting. Okay? Any questions? I forgot how much stuff is there before this element. Okay? So we need to count. That's what our goal for today is, to learn how to count. Okay? Any questions? Again, I occasionally get dirty looks from people when, you know, I used to teach a discrete math class from time to time. And they say, oh, so you teach math for computer scientists. What do you teach them how to do? You teach them calculus? No. You teach them some advanced, I teach them how to count. Okay? And people get nervous. But counting is hard. And what I'd like to do is to show you some of my favorite counting tricks, okay? And let's review counting a little bit, okay? So in general, the way that I count things, okay, is there's two main techniques that I tend to use. One is what I would call a technique of establishing bijections. Okay, now bijection is one of these big words you learned in 113 and may have forgotten. What is a bijection? Anyone remember? Okay, yeah. It's an if and only if thing, okay? Or it's what I would call a one-to-one mapping, okay? And the reason why bijections sometimes come into play in counting is suppose, let's say, that you want me to count this set of things. If I have another set of things that I know how to count. Let's say that I know how to count permutations. How many permutations of n things are there? Anyone remember? N factorial, right? So you know how to count permutations. Okay? Suppose I can show you that what you're interested in. Okay? There's a one-to-one mapping between, you know, knob hoppers of dimension d and permutations of size n. How many snodhoppers of dimension d are there? N factorial. You showed a one-to-one mapping between these two things, right? Now, so the real question is, in order to use this basic idea, that if basically if what you want to count is really the same as some other thing, that's really what a one-to-one mapping is saying. Is that Schnodhoppers of dimension d are really just permutations of size n. That means that what you really need to do is to have sets of things that you know how to count. Okay? So what things do I know how to count as, let's say, elementary operations that I know how to count? I know how to count permutations. Okay? There are n factorial permutations of n items. Does everybody understand that? Why are there n factorial permutations of n items? Let's go through that more carefully. Someone prove to me that there's n factorial permutations of n items? Okay. How do you prove it? Somebody, okay.
I guess you
Right, so the argument for how you do it is you say that suppose a permutation of n items has n slots in it, right? How many choices are there for my first item? N. Once I put that there, are there how many choices do I have for the second item? N minus one, right? And how many combinations, this actually gets back to the question, how many ways are there to build things where there are X possibilities for this and Y possibilities for that? Okay? Suppose you have, you know, X shirts and Y pants. How many different ways can you get dressed? X times Y. Does everybody believe that? Maybe not. Let's go and look at an example to make sure we believe this thing. Again, counting is both simple and hard, okay? I mean, the basic rules are that if you have, there's a product rule here. Okay, what we're really using here is something called the product rule, okay? That says that if there are A possibilities from one set and B possibilities from another set, there are A by B ways to combine them. Okay? And so A times B. And continuing that, we get the argument that there are N factorial ways to make permutations from N items. So everybody agree with that? So what do I need to know about permutations? First of all, the thing to know is how to count them. The other thing that I think is important to know is when does there get to be too many of them? Okay? Because a lot of these programs you might try to solve by exhaustive search. Right? Suppose, let's say, somebody's counting problem, the counting problem's on the parentheses of depth this thing. If you can convince yourself that there's not too many of them to go through, maybe if given a choice between thinking how do you count them versus constructing all parentheses and then testing them, you might opt to do it the hard way, okay? The hard but dumb way to do it might be an honorable thing to do. But that only works if the number of things that you're constructing is very, very small, okay? And I like to think a million is about the borderline between where numbers start to get large. So 10 factorial is a large number. They're starting to get to be a large number. 20 factorial is definitely a large number, okay? You know, it's, you know, like a million. Again, and maybe that I learned a million was a hard, large number. I'm also an old man, so the computers that I worked on when a million was a large number were maybe 10 years ago. Now what's a large number? 100 million is a large, certainly a large number, right? So how much bigger does N have to be before you get up to 100 million? Yeah, two bigger, okay? So 12 factorial is a large number, okay? So the difference, the good thing about this is that, you know you're in the ballpark of what is a large number. However you define what large is, it's around 10-ish that many factorial becomes large, okay? Another thing that I count are subsets. How many different subsets of N items are there? Does anyone know this thing? Okay. They give you N items. How many subsets of N items are there? Anyone, how do you know this by memory? Or is this one of you? Yeah. 2 to the N. Why are there 2 to the N subsets? Can someone now tell me why? First of all, let's prove, convince ourselves. How many subsets of 3 items are there? What are the subsets of 3 items? So you have 3, what do you see? You want to say 1, 2, 3, those are the single element subsets. 1 and 2, 2 and 3, 1 and 3, the empty set, and you also want to count the original one, right? So you also have the count, from the count both the empty set and the universal set, right? Else you've got trouble. But if so, we get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, which is indeed 2 to the N. from n equal to 3.
Why are there 2 to the n subsets? Yes?
Because each element has 2 choices to be included or not.
Okay? So one way to describe it that I like to think of it is, you can think of describing a subset by a bit vector of n bits, right? And this is the bit is 1 in the element subset, 2 in the subset, 3 in the subset. Every subset is described by a bit pattern. Yes or no, 1 is in. Yes or no, 2 is in. Yes or no, 3 is in. So how many ways are there to describe bit patterns of zeros and one of yeses and nos of length n? Two possibilities here, two possibilities here, two possibilities here, 2 to the n. Any questions? Does anyone see where I use my bijection counting idea now? If you remember at the beginning I started railing on here about bijections and how bijections were your friend. Okay? Well, where did I just use this bijection notion to make things easier to count? Okay?
Well, a binary number can be analogous to a decimal number. So you basically have the numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and those are mapping.
So I guess, okay, what I would say that we did was the following. We just did a mapping between subsets. You had your subsets here. You had your set of n subsets. And we did a mapping between that and strings of zeros and ones, right? Well, yes is a no.
Zero, 1, 1, 1, 0, 0, 1, 0, 1, 1, 1, 0, 1, 1, 1.
Right? What we did was we had a mapping here, right? And what was this one? This was AB, 1, 2, 1, 3. This thing was there. This thing is here. 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 Okay?
This one I guess minus.
So somehow the way we counted subsets was this was easy to count, right? You know how to count this coming in here. Okay, you know how to count strings of zeros and ones. Okay, or binary numbers from 0 to n minus 1. Okay? And we then used the bijective idea to figure out how to count how many subsets there are. Okay, any questions? Okay?
The final thing to count that I think is elementary is, in general, strings. Okay, and we've sort of shown how many strings are there on binary strings are there of length n?
Okay,
and
binary strings of length n. 2 to the n. That's what we just showed here. How many ternary strings are there of length n? 3 to the n. Why is that? There's 3 possibilities for the first position, 3 to the second, 3 to the... So in general, you need to know about, you know, how to count strings in general are often useful things to count.
Okay, they're like permutations, but you're drawing with repetitions. Okay? So where does a number get large? 2 to the n becomes a million around n equals 20. Okay, so that's sort of a sanity check of how large you can get to. How large does it become before it becomes a 100 million? What's the value of n so that, you know, 2 to the n becomes 100 million, which we now all agree is on even your computer large? So 2 to the 6 is... 64, right? So 2 to the 6 or 2 to the 7 is 100. Somewhere between 2 to the 6 and 2 to the 7 is 100. So 100 times this becomes 100 million. Now you're up to 27, 28. Okay? So still, it's about where the boundary is. Any questions? Okay? So knowing how to count these things gets you a long way. Not really actually help you on the problems that we give you here. But in general, that gives you a long way to go. Any questions? One thing that will give you mileage, though, the next thing I'll tell you about over a longer way will give you more mileage for, I think, these particular problems. And this has to do with recurrence relations.
Okay? How many people have seen recurrence relations? These are recursive counting formula. Yeah, in AMS 301, you did that? Okay, and you learned how to solve them symbolically and stuff like that? Okay, we're not going to worry about solving them symbolically, but in general, the easiest way to count things, when I'm given a counting problem, the easiest way I have to count them is to find a recurrence relation for it. What is a recurrence relation? Does anyone remember? How would you define what a recurrence relation is? Yeah?
Element N, A sub N, is based on, in some way, on previous elements.
Right. So it's a formula that's defined in terms of itself, is the way that I think of it. Okay? So a recurrence relation is A to the N equals A to the N minus 1 plus 1. Okay? And a recurrence relation is defined by, a sequence is completely defined by a recurrence relation and a boundary condition. Right? So base case, boundary condition. So what does the recurrence relation A1 equals 1, AN equals AN minus 1 plus 1 give us? Okay? What is the function that is described by that recurrence relation? Well, the sequence, what is A of N? You know, I think, solving a recurrence relation is taking a recursive formula and rewriting it as a normal arithmetic formula, independent of itself.
Right.
A sub N equals N, right? So why is that? Because, well, for 1, A of 2 is 1 plus 1. A of 3 is 2 plus 1, dot, 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 right? So one thing that's nice about recurrence relations is polynomials, every single polynomial function you can come up with, you can define a recurrence relation for it. Okay? So if something is counted by a polynomial, it can be counted by a recurrence relation. Okay? That's a good thing. What about a recurrence relation like A of 1 equals 2, A of N equals 2 times A of N minus 1? What is that recurrence telling you? Okay, knowing the boundary condition is not the important part. What is a recurrence like A of N equals 2 A of N minus 1 telling you? Okay, what does that tell you that the next term is relative to the previous term? So what is that function going to be? 2 to the N, right? Does everybody sort of believe that? Okay. So you get exponentials from recurrence relations. Okay, and in fact, any exponential function you want, there's a recurrence relation to define it. Okay? The other thing that's true is that weird functions, which are, what is your language for representing functions? You know about exponentials, you know about polynomials. What other functions do you know about? Okay? Any other kinds of functions you know about, or that you have formulas you can type on your, you know, you type in a report or something? Logarithms, but logarithms aren't really on integers somehow. Okay? You've got cosines and sines, those aren't really on integers. Okay?
Fibonacci's,
first of all, let's say it's a weird function. But actually, Fibonacci is defined by a recurrence, as you'll see a little bit later. Okay? I'm thinking about something like n factorial. You know what n factorial is. You can write n factorial. But that's still a weird function. You know, somehow you can write n factorial, but that's only the factorial, the bang symbol is sort of some shorthand because it comes up a lot. This is a weird function. You don't know how to generalize it. You don't know what 2.5 factorial is, for example. Remember, that sort of gets you into some deep mathematics when you start asking yourself, what is 2.5 factorial? Okay. There's something called the gamma function that somehow people have generalized factorial to. I think that's what it's called, right? Yeah. So, but anyway, but I don't deal with that. But it's very easy to find a recurrence relation for n factorial, right? A of n equals n times a of n minus 1. Does everybody agree that that gives me n factorial? This is worth verifying if you can't,
you know, again. I say that a of n equals n times a of n minus 1. So for 1, what is we initialize a of n? This is n, a of n. What is the function going to be for n equals 2? 2 times the previous value, that's 2. 3 times the previous value, that's 6. 4 times the previous value, that's 24. Okay? Does everybody agree with that, that this recurrence relation gives us n factorial?
Okay. So what is the powerful thing about recurrence relations? Okay? They give us a language to express lots of functions. Those that you can represent in other easy ways, and those that you cannot represent in easy ways. Okay? The other thing is that it's very usually or often very easy to find a recurrence relation as an answer to a counting formula. Okay? Many of you remember when you took combinatorics class, you dealt with recurrence relations, right? Now, I'm going to guess what your experience with recurrence relation was. He defined what a recurrence relation was, showed you a few examples, and then told you how to solve it, right? That for the special case of homogeneous or inhomogeneous things, there was this form of the way to solve it. Solving a recurrence relation is a tricky business and an ugly business, okay? And I'm not going to worry about that, because you're not really here worried about solving it symbolically. In general, if I give you a recurrence relation, it's easy to write a program to evaluate it, right? So your business here is to tell me how many parentheses there are on N and D. You don't need a nice closed form, right? If I gave you a recurrence relation, that would be enough to do the computation. Does everybody sort of agree with that? This is the key idea here. So we're not going to worry about solving them. We're going to worry about formulating them in general, and then numerically evaluating them. Okay, any questions? Yeah?
Is it about
like
using recursion?
Right, so a recurrence relation is essentially recursive.
You know, if it's going to end up being Java,
okay, but let's see how we're going to deal with evaluating a recurrence relation. My claim actually is, and this is going to be very useful for later on, you can evaluate a recurrence without using recursion. Okay? And that's actually a good thing in general. Okay? Any questions? So let's take a look at one of the most important recurrence relations. Okay? It's for counting something called binomial coefficients. Does everyone remember what a binomial coefficient is? Or you've probably seen it. The binomial coefficient is a weird function of two numbers, n and k. By weird function, I mean that it has its special notation for it. And we read that as n choose k. And n choose k counts the number of ways there are to choose n things out of k possibilities. Right? It's the number of subsets of n things that with exactly k elements. Does everybody agree that's what the definition means? Okay? So what is, just to make sure we understand this, what is n choose 1? How many ways are you going to choose one thing out of n things? N, right? Does everybody agree with that? How many ways are there to choose n things out of n things? Right. There's only one subset of size n on n things, right? What is that subset? The original complete subset, right? Okay. In general, n choose k is the number of ways to choose k things out of n. Okay? Any questions? Okay? Once you understand the notion of binomial coefficient, there are lots of things you can count. Okay? What things can you count? How many ways are there to form a committee of k people out of n people? Okay, having this room here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 people, I'm not going to be on your committee, okay, it's 10 of you, okay? How many ways are there to put, make a committee of 3 of you guys? 10 choose 3, right? Okay, does everybody agree with that? So you can count how many committees there are, yeah?
Okay. Is there a formula for solving that?
For evaluating that? Does anyone remember what N choose K is?
So in fact, if you know what you're doing, N choose K is equal to N factorial over K factorial N minus K factorial. Does somebody want to give me a proof of this?
I know everyone very quickly spit that out.
Okay. Someone want to tell me why are there that many subsets of size K? Let's
try to prove that.
Okay. Yeah. So this n factorial is this n permutation, right? And the thing is, you're splitting into two subsets of K and n minus K.
Yeah.
Each of them also contains K factorial.
Actually, let's, the way I think this formula is a little bit misleading if you look at it. How many ways are there? Forget about the formula. Why don't you tell me how to write it? If I'm giving you a committee of K people here, how many twists are there for the first person? How many for the next person? How much for the K person? N minus K?
K minus 1? Is there something else?
What is it?
Okay, if I have one person, okay, so I'm going to let's make sure we got to have this now. Okay, if there are 4 people, I want to be N minus 1, N minus 2, N minus 3, right? So before, that's N minus, so this is right, right? Everybody agree with it? So the answer is it's this times this, right? Okay, and what is that? Well, and the question is though, if we do it like this, first of all, have we overcounted? Okay? How many committees can be 4? Let's try this for as an example here.
Yeah, I think you've overcounted because there can be any number of, I mean, you'll have counted, you have to divide it by K factorial, right? Because there's K different, I don't know.
Right, now notice that this is, I want to know subsets. This is telling me ordered committees.
Remember, right.
This is telling me how many ways there are to put the important people. Let's say I sort people by, order them by importantness. Okay, this is the president, vice president, secretary, treasurer, whatever. Okay, but in a committee, is the committee is the same regardless of which chair they sit in, right? So that's going to argue it's this divided by K factorial. Does everyone agree with that? Okay. And if you believe that, then you see where this equation is. This over here, what is this part of the equation? That's n factorial with all the terms from n minus k on down hacked out, off, right? So this division by this is hacking off those terms. Okay? And that is the argument why this is right. Okay, does everybody see that now? Okay? So the nice thing about it is that in principle, once we've decided that n choose k is the right answer, that sort of tells you how to calculate it. Any questions? Okay? So let's think what other things we can count.
Suppose, let's say I want to count how many days there are to get in Manhattan. We all know that in Manhattan, the streets are arranged in a grid. Perfect grid.
You don't worry about Broadway or anything like that.
Okay? So here I am at this corner. And I want to get to this corner. I want to walk from here to here.
there are N blocks across here, and N blocks, N, I want to go N blocks to the east and N blocks north. How many different ways are there for me to walk from here to here with the shortest possible distance? Okay. Let's think first of all, what is the shortest possible distance? Any path without going back would choose to see. So basically, the shortest distance is 1 to 3 m steps, or actually m minus 1 steps to be precise, right? Let's make it m plus 1 blocks by n plus 1 blocks, just so we can talk about m and n in terms of the distance. The distance would be m steps here and n steps up there. So long as you go to the left, you know, so basically any sequence of M right moves and N up moves. If they're leaves, they're going to be perfectly fine. Right? That's all going to, they're all going to have the same shortest distance. We could walk up in here, we could walk up there, we could zigzag back and forth. We can't walk backwards or down, right? And then we're not allowed to take the shortest walk, right? How many walks across the grid are there? Okay, can we count how many walks across this grid are there? Yes? You might write a program for, well, let's think if we can use it using our friend binomial coefficients. Okay. Recursively is fine. Okay, are you thinking about it as a program, anything about it as a formula? Okay, you want to design a formula? What's a good formula? Okay. Program. Okay, program, let's think. How program. Okay? Program we get out of here. Okay. So how many ways are there across this grid? You sort of described to me what all quarters are, right? You want to say how many walks are there? What does every quarter look like? Okay. Well, how many what does every quarter look like? Yeah.
It's going to have m plus n slots, and it will have.
How much would it be in that?
And then each one will either be a right or an up. Yes.
And how many rights and ups?
There will be m rights and n ups.
N rights and m ups. Right, okay.
Is that the other way?
Okay,
doesn't
that okay.
Okay,
right.
And then, so basically you have to come up with the number of unique...
Number of springs? You want to tell me how many springs are there of length n plus m on R and U where there are exactly n R's.
Right.
Right? So what is that? Well, let's count it in terms of binomial coefficients. What does binomial coefficient do? It chooses subsets, right? Tells me how many subsets of a particular size are there, right? So what subset of a particular size are we interested in? Okay. Well, you want to describe the walks here. What makes one walk different than another walk? They all have R, N, R's in it. The order of what?
It doesn't matter.
In describing a different walk, the order does matter, right? The end of where you end up getting there, it doesn't matter, right? Yeah? Right. So the question is, there's n plus n slots. Any legal description, any legal walk will have n of n equal to r, right? Why don't we choose the n positions where the rights are? Okay? The rest are all going to be ups, right? And so in fact, n plus n choose n is the number of such walks. Okay? Why? Let's take a look at a small example. Okay? Let's cut across this 2x3 grid. Okay? How long is the square going to be? Let's just say n plus n. How many slots are there in this thing? 3 plus 2 or 5 slots. How many ways are there to, how many possible descriptions are there to get you up here as quickly as possible? You need to have 2 right, correct? And in any possible sequence like this, there's going to be 3 ups and 2 rights. Where are the 2 rights going to be? 3 rights, okay, 2 ups. Ups are the smaller thing. Okay? So how many ups are there? Where can we put the ups? Any pair of positions we want, we can put the up, and it's a different walk. Does everybody agree with that? This up is different than that. This walk is different than that walk. So you choose the end positions for the ups out of the n plus 1 possibilities. And that tells you how many walks across the bridge. Okay, everybody sort of get that? Okay. So learning to count in terms of binomial coefficients gives you power. That's the point here. Okay? Any questions? Okay? And so thinking about this in terms of binomial coefficients is a lot easier than thinking about it in terms of factorials. That's the other point here. Okay? Any questions? Okay, well, that's true. How do you compute binomial coefficients? Okay. Now I have told you the answer to your problem is n choose k. And I now want you to write a program to compute n choose k. How can you do it? Okay. You should know one way to compute n choose k. We talked about it. If you wanted to write a program to compute n choose k, how could you do it? You could use this formula, right? How would you write that? 4i goes from 1 to n, multiply them all together, right? 4i goes from 1 to k, divide that total by k. 4i goes from 1 to n minus k, divide that. Okay, and you're done, right? What is the problem here? Okay? Not run out of memory. Run out of bits. Or your integers will be, let's say you want to store a number in your equation. Let's say you want to compute 1,000 choose 999. Okay? What is that? I can compute that pretty easily. What is that? What is the actual number here? 1,000, right? So that fits in as many bits as I have up here. That's small. Okay? But what if you were to go through your procedure? How big an integer do you need to store 1,000 factorial?
Very large.
Very large, right? Not large, not long, but very large. Too large, right? Does everybody see that this computation might produce intermediate results that are too big? Okay, does everybody see that? That is the problem with this. What? It can only be by spring representation. No, you mean you could compute, simulate large integers like I told you to do in the previous chapter or something? You could, but the other possibility is to be smarter on how you compute and choose k. Okay?
It seems like, for one thing, you don't need to loop over all of n when you create a factorial, because you know you're going to try to divide out, you know, a number of integers to chop off. And so you can take whichever is larger, if k is more than half of n.
Okay, you could play games with trying to not multiply it too large and cancel when you can. I still know you're doing something clumsy, probably incorrect, at the very least clumsy. Okay? Let me show you a better way to do this, okay?
And this has to do with using a recurrence relation. Okay? Does everybody remember seeing Pascal's triangle at some point? Yeah, in high school you saw Pascal's triangle. Does anyone remember why you saw Pascal's triangle? This I don't expect. This, you know.
It was like the coefficients for polynomial factors.
You mean binomial coefficients?
I guess so.
Yeah, okay. That was what it was, okay? So what Pascal's triangle was doing, what was Pascal's triangle?
Okay. Pascal's triangle was, if I remember correctly, you start out with one, right? You're in general, you have your ones along here and ones along here. But what is the real thing that you're doing? For each element, you have it be the sum of the two elements above it, right? This was two. And this was three, and this was four, six, four, one, right? And the next level was 10, 5, 1, right? I claim that what Pascal's triangle was doing was computing binomial coefficients. This was, the row was n, and the number of the elements along the way was k. Okay? Does everybody remember? Let's think if we convince ourselves of this. Here was, how many ways are there to choose two things out of four? This is 2, 3, 4. How many wave subsets are there of four things where we choose zero of them? What is 4, 2, 0?
1.
What is 4, 2, 1? Okay, it should be 4, right? If I write it before, you think any one of the one elements. What is 4, 2, 2? Well, now let's go to your fancy factorial thing, just to be sure. What's 4 factorial divided by k factorial is 2 factorial. 4 minus 2 is 2 factorial, right? What is this? This is going to be 3 factorial divided by
2 factorial.
Divided by, okay, right. So it was going to be 4 factorial, 4, 3, 2, 1, divided by 2 times 2, which is 6. So really what Pascal's triangle was doing was counting factorials, was counting binomial coefficients. And if you think about it, this act of counting a binomial coefficient, saying it was the sum of two smaller things, really what that was a recurrence relation. Why? You're expressing n choose k in terms of what? N minus 1 choose k, and n minus 1 choose k minus 1, right? That's really what you're doing. It was a recurrence relation. So Pascal's triangle was using this recurrence relation. That's really what it was doing. Now, why is that recurrence relation right? And this is maybe the most important part of the entire exercise. Can someone give me a convincing argument that n choose k is equal to n minus 1 choose k minus 1 plus n minus 1 choose k? Okay? How many ways are there to choose
n things out of k? Want to choose, I did k things out of n. Okay? I want to argue that there's two ways to choose n things out of k. One is, if the largest thing that I chose was n, right? If the largest thing I chose in my subset of k things was n, how many ways are there to do that? Well, once I've chosen n, I know one of the k values of my subset, right? I now need to pick k minus 1 other values. Okay? Whose largest value is to be what? Why n minus 1 and not n?
I've
already chosen, right? This is the number of ways to pick a k subset where n is the largest element, right? Everybody agree with that? How many ways are there to pick a k subset where n is not the largest element? I still can't pick n. So I'm going to have to pick from the numbers from n minus, none of the elements, the largest one was not n. Then they were all picked from the numbers n minus 1 and lower. How many of them do I still have to pick? Okay. That is the recursive idea. Everybody agree with that? Okay. This is the key insight here.
Okay. Is that you basically have a recurrence relation and you have to get your basis relations right. Okay? Any questions? Okay? Now that you have that recurrence relation, I claim I can write a program to evaluate binomial coefficients, okay, which is not recursive to solve your Java problem and is not going to use big numbers. Okay? What am I going to do? I am going to build a table, BC, which is basically going to have all the possible values of n choose k. The first value is n, the second value is k. Okay? I initialize the boundary conditions. Okay? But in general, what am I going to be doing? I'm going to be pretending I'm Pascal's triangle. To commute the value of BC of I, IJ, is going to be BC of I minus 1, J minus 1, plus BC I minus 1, J. And if I have loops so that I fill in the values of the table from smallest to biggest, just like in Pascal's triangle, remember, you filled in this value by looking at the two values above it. And you filled in the table from the beginning and worked the way down. So really what I'm doing here is I'm tabulating the values of my binomial coefficients, okay, in this table. Any questions? Okay? Everybody sort of see that? Okay? I strongly encourage you to look at this. It was in the book. Look at this program. And make sure you understand why this program works. Now, this program is simple, and you may not even have to compute binomial coefficients in this thing. So why am I telling you to look at it? The major reason is because we get to something much more complicated, dynamic programming, later in the semester. We're going to be doing exactly this for more complicated recurrence relations. If you don't understand this thing, you won't understand that. Okay? So make sure you understand why this program gives me the right value for the binomial coefficients. Think about that. It's not that hard, but make sure you think about that. Any questions? Okay? But this is the general technique that you'll be using for those counting problems. Come up with a recurrence relation, and once you have the recurrence relation, evaluate it like this. Okay? Any questions? Okay, so the hard part of what you're going to be doing in here is evaluating recurrence relations, is defining recurrence relations. Okay? Let's look at two classes of recurrence relations, and then I'll let you go. I'll give you something to think about. First recurrence relation is the Fibonacci numbers. Everybody here, is there anybody here who's never seen the Fibonacci numbers? Okay, everybody, I think, has seen this. Anyone know, not know what the Fibonacci numbers are? What are the Fibonacci numbers? It's one, you know the sequence. It goes, basically, when you say it's a sequence of five, but you start with 0 and 1, and you add up the two previous terms, right? Okay, does anybody know why you all know the Fibonacci numbers? 113, but why does anybody care about the Fibonacci numbers?
Isn't it found in nature?
Found, a lot of things are found in nature, okay, if you don't know about them, okay? What I think is interesting about the Fibonacci numbers, it probably has come up in a lot of cute things. The main thing I think about the Fibonacci numbers is that they are defined by about the simplest recurrence relation you can think of. What is the recurrence relation the Fibonacci numbers use? What is f of n equal to? Okay? f of n equals f of n minus 1 plus f of n minus 2. Can you come up with a simpler recurrence relation than that? Okay, I mean, you can have it with one term, but then it's not interesting. With two terms, it's about as simple and interesting as you can come up with. So why does it come up in nature? Well, it's because this is the simplest recurrence relation. Something in nature is going to be recursive, it might as well be the simplest recursive thing. Okay, that's the big picture. Okay? So, Fibonacci numbers are governed by the simple recurrence relation. And a lot of things that you count are counted by the Fibonacci numbers in disguise. How do you find them out? Well, you define the recurrence, you find the recurrence relation. If your recurrence relation is this, then it's counted by the Fibonacci numbers. Okay? Any questions? Okay? Let me show you one last recurrence relation. And this, I know I'm running out of time, but this will make one of your problems much easier. Okay? Is a recurrence relation, this very complicated recurrence relation, defining something called the Catalan numbers. Okay? C sub n equals the sum of k to 0 to n minus 1 of ck times cn minus 1k. So Fibonacci was summing up the terms. Here you're multiplying terms. Okay? What is that? And you're summing it up over this thing. Why is this interesting? How many ways are there to parenthesize n things independent of depth? Okay? You care about depth now because you've got a homework problem, right? But let's forget about depth. How many ways are there to parenthesize n things? N divided by 2? No. Okay. Let's come up with a... Okay. Let's say... I mean, I think there's a lot of ways to parenthesize n things. Okay.
I mean, just to add an arbitrary number of parentheses?
To make it so it's a well-formed formula. A wolf.
There's an infinite number.
But on n, once I tell you that there's n parentheses total, or n left, n left, and n right. How many ways are there to make a well-formed formula on two left parentheses and two right parentheses? But show me. How do you do it? Let's make a well-formed formula on two left and two right. How do you do it? And what? Any other way to do it? Okay? Can we come up with a recursive program? Let's let C sub n equal the number of ways to parenthesize with n left and n right. Can we come up with a recurrence relation for C of n? Okay? I'm just going to go through it briefly so you can read it. And we'll talk more about it next class. But what I claim is, what's the first symbol in any well-formed parenthesis?
Well, there has to be a
Everybody agree it has to be a left? Where is its matching parentheses? Somewhere, right? Let's say I put it in the kth position. How many ways are there to finish the job and make this a well-formed parenthesization? What do I know about these blank spots between here? They better be what? They have to be well-formed, right? Once I put this parenthesis in place, I can't have anything outside of it, can I? I can't have it match something outside, right? Now, what about all the stuff to the right of it? What about, we know about this? It has to be well-formed, right? There's no way I can have something that's ugly between the two of them, right? It's not a wolf. Well-formed formula. Okay? So how many ways are there to do it? The number of ways in here plus the number of ways times the number of ways in here, right? Everybody agree with that? Because these are independent of those. Okay? So any one of these can match any one of those. So we multiply them, right? Everybody agree with that? So where does this thing come from? The number of parentheses on n things, of n sets of well-matched parentheses, is, for all possible places to insert that matching thing, I'm going to bite off this k parentheses in between them, k sets of parentheses in between them, the number of ways to parenthesize that, by the number of parentheses, not in, including that k that are in there, and the one that you used outside. That is where this comes from. Okay, does everybody see that? Okay, think about it. It's not so easy. But it's clear to me that that this is a necessary thing to solving the other one, right? Okay? So think about it. Okay? Make sure you understand where this comes from and then attack the parenthesis, the depth one. Okay? I will talk more about this next class. Thank you for your attention. Bye-bye.